Typical advice on how to decrease hot flashes and night sweats usually includes helpful suggestions like dress in layers, use a hot flash pillow, wear menopause pajamas, carry around a portable fan, eat more celery, bananas, and spinach, and exercise more. A hot flash pillow? Really? And I don't even know what menopause pajamas are, but unless they're made out of silk, it doesn't sound like anything I want to own. And whipping out a portable fan while giving a big presentation at work? I don't think so. Eating more bananas and spinach will help, but only if you eat them while standing in front of the refrigerator with the door open. But what about exercise? Seems like a good suggestion, but in scientific studies, exercise has shown mixed results for reducing hot flashes. In today's Journal Club episode, my guest, Dr. Maria Sophocles, and I dissect a new study about the impact of activity and exercise on hot flashes. I'm Dr. Lauren Stryker, a gynecologist, best-selling author, and a nationally recognized menopause expert. When it comes to menopause midlife and what comes after, I'm betting you've not gotten a lot of information from your own doctor. If women are given good information, they'll make good choices. And I'm here to give you the inside information. There's no question that exercise is good for you. Cardiovascular health, weight management, cognitive function, mood, better sleep, and even reducing the risk of many kinds of cancer are all established benefits to moving as opposed to sitting on your butt all day. But when it comes to reducing hot flashes, the jury's still out. On one hand, any activity that increases your core temperature is not going to cool you down. On the other hand, some scientists suggest that exercise training fixes your out-of-control thermoregulatory zone by routinely having to respond to an increase in core temperature. The studies, they're all over the map. Some studies show exercise helps. Other studies show it makes flashes worse or makes no difference. Most of these studies are poorly designed, and even when the conclusion is that exercise is beneficial, it can't be considered to be definitive. Interestingly, one well-done study released in 2021 shows that resistance training can reduce hot flashes and night sweats by roughly 50%. The exercise group that stuck to a regimen of 3 weekly 45-minute sessions with a combination of resistance machines and body weights after 4 months not only ended up with really buff arms, but also decreased their hot flash frequency from an average of 7.5 flashes a night to 4.4 flashes over 24 hours. The non-exercisers, no decrease in flashes. So although pumping iron didn't make flashes entirely disappear, there was a significant decrease. And what about yoga? Yoga goes under the heading of being good for many things, but alleviating menopausal hot flashes isn't one of them. Many forms of yoga have been studied, but in randomized trials, none have been shown to lead to a reduction in the frequency or severity of hot flashes, especially hot yoga. The good thing about hot yoga is that no one will notice you're sweating. The bad news is that between the 105-degree temperature in the room, followed by a series of hot flashes, you may pass out during downward dog. Hot yoga aside, it doesn't seem to matter if your yoga practice includes breathing, meditation, poses held for a really long time, expensive yoga clothes, or an extra long savasana. Before you write me angry emails that yoga worked for you, I don't doubt it. I'm just reporting what the research shows. Although in complete fairness, wearing fabulous yoga clothes has never adequately been studied. According to the Menopause Society, quote, a systematic review of 12 randomized controlled trials assessed yoga. Given that all outcomes were self-reported and that there was insufficient blinding of participants, there was a high risk for reporting and detection bias. But among the studies, yoga had limited benefits compared with exercise for the treatment of hot flashes, and there were no benefits compared with other types of exercise. So the official conclusion from the Menopause Society is while there are other health benefits associated with exercise and yoga, evidence for the treatment of hot flashes is sparse, which is why the Menopause Society puts yoga and exercise on their not recommended list for treating hot flashes. I put exercise on the you should be doing it anyway for your heart and your bones, so be sure to throw some resistance training in there to ensure buff arms and increase the odds that will also help flashes. So with all this inconsistent data, I'm always happy to see a new study on the impact of exercise on hot flashes to once and for all answer the question. And this month in the journal Menopause, a study titled The Influence of Habitual Physical Activity in Sedentary Behavior on Objective and Subjective Hot Flashes at Midlife was published. And for anyone who wants to read the paper on their own, the link is in the show notes. So I'm joined to discuss this new study by Dr. Maria Sophocles. Dr. Sophocles is the medical director of Women's Healthcare of Princeton. She's a certified menopause practitioner and has a particular interest in non-hormonal approaches to help with menopause symptoms. So I thought she'd be the perfect person to help me figure out if this study actually answers any questions regarding the impact of exercise and activity on hot flashes. And warning, it gets a little confusing. So I do wrap it all up at the end. So welcome, Dr. Sophocles.
Thank you, Dr. Stryker. Nice to be here.
The last time we saw each other, it was in Austin. The She Media Group had us there to talk on their stage, and I talked about cannabis and orgasm, but you had a lot more fun because you were part of a panel. So who was on your panel, and what did you talk about?
The topic was pleasure is healthy, why sexual wellness is a priority. And you're right, it was kind of fun to be up there with a bunch of gal pals. Dr. Kelly Casperson, a urologist and podcaster, was there. She's, I think, well known to both of us. Dr. Karen Eilber, a urologist from UCLA, was there. And a sex therapist and podcaster named Danielle Savory was there. I spoke about what pleasure means to women and why women often deny themselves sexual pleasure, why so few OBGYNs actually discuss sexual health.
Well, you and I both know the answer to that. It's because if someone says, I can't have an orgasm, can you help me? And the only thing that the OB knows how to say is, I'm sorry.
Well, they weren't trained. Our era, I know most of us really didn't have really good training. We had a little smidge of training. I mean, right? We've learned this.
We knew after the fact, not during our residency.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think people bring their own personal squeamishness or bias into the exam room, meaning clinicians do. So I think even some clinicians who get some training, they just don't feel comfortable talking about it.
Such a good point that you make, because when a clinician isn't comfortable discussing sex, the patient always knows it. And then that makes her uncomfortable. You know, she's already uncomfortable bringing it up. And then when clearly the person that she's talking about it with is like, you know, looking like they'd rather be someplace else, it's just not going to be helpful. So
no, and I think that happens a lot. I think Cheryl Kingsburg looked into this years ago. And one I remember learning from her, give the patient permission to feel comfortable talking about a tricky subject. And we can do that with our body language, with pausing, with listening. I read some study that clinicians interrupt on average after like 3 seconds of a patient talking. So, right?
However, that study, as I recall, it was an old study. Yeah. I think it was men interrupted much quicker than women, right?
Okay. Okay.
I could be wrong on that one, but I just have this vague recollection that men interrupt after like a nanosecond and women at least give it 3 or 4 seconds before they interrupt.
Right. Right. Well, someone needs to repeat it now that there are so many more women in our field and see if we can maybe amend medical education to practice better listening, better body language, to give women a feeling that they could bring this up. So that was part of what we talked about. We actually hit a lot of the themes in the book, fully forthcoming book called The Bedroom Gap, which was the basis for this TED Talk that just came out.
Well, okay, so TED Talk. So you just gave a TED Talk. And I will put the link in the program notes so everybody can listen to it. But just give us a little teaser.
It was a look at what happens to women genitally and sexually with menopause, what happens to our bodies, why sex hurts, and how this can lead to issues in the bedroom, stuff you and I already know. And to know that there are safe and effective treatments to reverse these changes. And the talk also covers the lack of available options to help female sexual issues like low libido, which reflects then that larger gendered healthcare gap. But ultimately, the talk is a call to action for women to move beyond these millennia-old models of sex is for male pleasure and procreation, and to speak up to their partners, to their clinicians, and to embrace really a right to sexual pleasure. So that was my hope.
I love that. And that's so much of, I'm sure you're familiar with Laurie Mintz's work, who talks about the orgasm gap and the expectation that men will have orgasms all the time and they assume that they will. And women have no expectation. I did a podcast episode with her a while back. I really need to replay it because she's so good, or have her back.
Oh,
we
yes.
could talk about this forever, but I do want to get onto this article because I promised everybody a mini journal club. You know, when we talk about doing these mini journal clubs, that you know, this is how we learn stuff. We are constantly reading. We are constantly changing because the science is constantly changing. And it's so much more fun, quite frankly, and educational to do it with another expert instead of me just reading the article myself, because you're going to pick up nuances that I'm not. And we've all read different things. So that's the purpose of doing these journal clubs. The last one I did was with Dr. Minkin. And people are still talking about it because, of course, we got into a really interesting, fun argument.
And that's the essence of Mary Jane Minkin. I mean, that's what makes her, I think, so engaging and so much fun.
And it is also the essence of academic dialogue, if you will.
Right.
Academic discourse.
Right.
Okay. So this article. So
the influence of habitual physical activity and sedentary behavior on objective and subjective hot flashes.
You know, the data on the relationship to exercise and hot flashes has been really inconsistent. Some of the studies show that exercise and activity trigger hot flashes, which, you know, especially hot yoga, I'm just kind of throwing that out there. But other studies show that regular exercise reduce the number and severity of hot flashes. And some studies show that there's no impact. So the data is all over the place. You know, we know that this is complicated, the relationship between physical activity and hot flash experience, because there's so many other variables. But the purpose of this study was to try and get a little bit more information about this relationship between physical activity, sedentary time, and hot flashes during both waking and sleeping periods. So before you personally read this study, what were you telling patients about the relationship between exercise and hot flashes?
Yeah, I talk about it a lot, actually. So I tell women that regular exercise improves the body's ability to regulate its temperature. We know this is true. It also helps regulate body mass and fat mass. And this can decrease the number and severity of hot flashes. Not consistently, as you said, studies show different things, but there are none of my patients that don't want help with their little belly fat that's developed. Mm-hmm. And if we look at the physiology of what happens with regular exercise, it makes for overall better quality of life. It decreases the amount of sweating that one does. So you actually sweat less with exercise. It just overall helps you to be able to regulate your own temperature. There was a study, there were like 3,500 Latino women, and they tested them and found that regular exercise did decrease the actual discomfort that these women felt when they had hot flashes. So that I found interesting, that they didn't just count the hot flashes. They looked at among women who exercise and those who don't, when you have a hot flash, do you get through it better? Because that's kind of what would mean something to me, or at least deal with them better.
My take is a little different because while there is no question that, of course, you want women to feel better and be more comfortable and not be as distressed by these hot flashes. But at the end of the day, that aside, I'm looking at the long-term impact of these hot flashes. So if someone's still having hot flashes, even if they're feeling a little bit better with them, I still worry about the long-term impact on inflammatory markers, cardiovascular disease, cognitive function, and stuff we're going to talk about later. My message to patients has been different because what I have been telling them is I think that exercise is critically important in midlife. Every woman should be exercising for the long list of benefits that you and I can list. But if I have someone who comes in and is having, and I'm talking not mild hot flashes, moderate to severe hot flashes, and they say to me, if I am in a regular exercise program, is that going to decrease my hot flashes? What I've always said to them is, the literature really doesn't support that. And just like you cited this one study, there's for every study like that, there's another one that shows that it doesn't work. And
that's
and
true.
The only study I've seen that actually looked like it really had an impact on hot flashes was one that had progressive heavy weightlifting. For whatever reason, that study was one of the few that seemed to make a difference. So before I read this study, I was kind of in a neutral as to where the study was going to lead me. You know, like a lot of times you read a study and you think you know what the result's going to be.
And
this one, I thought, okay, well, I'm kind of interested in what these people found. So what they did was there were 196 healthy, non-smoking women, and they were looking at perimenopause and early postmenopause, so 45 to 55. And they had them record their physical activity for a period of a week. And then they wore this monitor, this sternal monitor that we're going to talk about, that recorded hot flashes over a 24-hour period. So that was the basic design. And in so many studies, the methods that are used to record hot flashes are really inconsistent, which may at least partially account for a lot of the inconsistent results. I remember when they were doing the studies for Brizdel, you know, the non-hormonal hot flash drug, when they were doing those studies, they actually had women at night put a box of Kleenex by the bedside. And every time they would have a hot flash, they would throw a Kleenex on the floor. And then in the morning, they would count the Kleenex. And that's how they knew if the drug was working. And I'm thinking, okay,
wow.
Creative, but kind of low tech, you know? But
what if they had to blow their nose?
So they had a bad cold, it would completely throw it off. And then if they had a mild hot flash, it was one piece of Kleenex, moderate, it was two, and severe, it was three. And I have used that for women just because they need a way to monitor if whatever they were using was working. But, you know, we're talking about big studies that this is how they were monitoring.
So I felt the same thing, by the way, Lauren, that a lot of these are, you know, first of all, whenever you have self-reported data, there's risk, right? There's risk. So I think the more technical we can be, the more high level technically
we
can be,
that.
The better.
We know that from multiple studies that women are not even aware of a lot of hot flashes they have. You know, it's kind of like, I don't know about you, but when I was pregnant and at the end of the day, I realized that I hadn't felt my baby move at all. And I was convinced she was dead. And fortunately for me, I worked in an OB office. I was able to put the monitor on and say, oh, look, she is kicking. The point being that it's not that she wasn't kicking and moving. It's I was so busy doing other things and I was in surgery and running around that at the end of the day, I was like, whoa, you know, and I think, and I'm not again minimizing the hot flashes, severe hot flashes, no matter what you're doing, it's going to stop you in your tracks. But no question that there is going to be a difference in terms of perception of hot flashes. So in this study, they used a sternal monitor, which both you and I are familiar with. And this is basically a high-tech device where you put this monitor on their sternum, which will record every single hot flash. And they wore this for 24 hours. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what was your take on that?
Well, I have to admit, when I saw 24 hours, and not that I'd want to wear one of those for more than 24 hours, but I think 24 hours is not necessarily long enough, because I'd love to see the study repeated with maybe 72 hours or something, only because there is daily variability in hot flashes and there are other variables. They could have had a rough day at work and been stressed that night. The ambient temperature in the room could have been slightly different.
You know, whether they were to drink alcohol, that would throw
right.
up. But having said that, and I agree with you about 24 hours, absolutely. But as far as using a sternal monitor, to me, that made this study so much more valid than other studies.
For sure.
We know from very, very good work, our mutual friend Pauline Mackey, of course, who's really studied this stuff, she was published data looking at these sternal monitors and saying, guess what? Women are only aware of what, at best, 60% of hot flashes that they're having. So a lot of people might be thinking, okay, well, who cares if you're having them and you don't know about them? Well, you care because, again, you're setting
the inflammatory
reaction and all the bad stuff down the road. And
that's right.
So, but the other thing also that I thought was so interesting about that is that it goes both ways. It's we have women who say, I'm not having hot flashes, and they are, but there's also women that report a hot flash when they haven't had one. And I never really thought about that as far as throwing off the studies.
Yeah, not only throwing off the studies, but it reminds me a little bit of something I read in The Menopause Brain by Lisa Moscone, where she talks about the perception of how difficult menopause is. And of course, you could say that same thing for hot flashes, that there are some cultures, right, where menopause is not this disease to be cured, not anything. And it's barely like a blip on, maybe these are cultures in war-torn countries or cultures like Japan, where they really internalize, they don't express pain a lot. And in those countries, women report fewer hot flashes than they do in countries where it's a little more out of the box, or it's perceived as more of a life challenge or a disease to be cured. So I wonder if it'd be interesting to do a study on different cultures to see how many, let's say, Japanese women versus American women perceive, how many hot flashes they perceive versus how many they actually have. and
Well,
what
there was
the
a study
cultural
that
impact
was
is.
in Menopause a couple months ago that I actually am very familiar with the study because I'm on the editorial board and I reviewed it. And then I was asked to write an editorial about it. And this was a multi-country study looking at vasomotor symptoms and the hot flash experience. And it was dramatic in that in other countries, the number of hot flashes that was perceived was much, much lower than we see in the U.S. I mean, we are usually in the neighborhood of 75 to 80% of women are experiencing hot flashes for some period of time. And in these countries, it was 20% or 30%. And is it because they're genetically different?
Diet or
No. Is it
genetic or
because they're eating differently? No. One of the things I looked at and that I wrote my editorial about is that the study group was problematic because they were saying people who haven't had a period, well, a lot of them probably had hysterectomies and still had their ovaries. So of course they weren't having hot flashes. So there was, you know, other variables like that. But to your point, I think that culturally, in terms of how people feel about menopause, how they feel about their hot flashes, I think that's going to make a difference. But I also have this kind of just personal feeling that that's the case when you're talking about maybe mild to moderate. But these women that are just, you know, miserable and walking
constant.
around 40, 50 times a day with sweat pouring off of them and shaking chills. And, you know, I find a hard time saying that it's kind of the equivalent of saying, not that it's all in their head, but I mean, we know that
No,
something is
no. Those, I
much
mean,
more
it's
than
almost, yeah, it's almost like they're almost to me, those women are almost like women with an autonomic nervous system dysfunction, like a POTS syndrome or something. Like I have patients with POTS that have 100 vasomotor episodes a day, 100. And for patients like that, and patients like you're describing, it's, you know, something like exercise, even if we wave a wand and they're perfect exercisers and they get 50% fewer, they're still dealing with 50 hot flashes a day. You can't hold a job down like that.
You
So
can't.
I think for people like that, exercise is great and important, but they're going to have to address the hypothalamic pathway and the autonomic nervous system either through medical therapy or some of the bioelectric paths that some of these devices are investigating, which I think we're just beginning this, Lauren. I think in the next few years, we're going to see some really cool work in the device field that will maybe eliminate them or at least markedly improve them because it'll be working right on the autonomic nervous system. So,
Absolutely. And not to mention when we look at non-hormonal drugs, they're much more sophisticated now in that, yes, of course, we know that hormone therapy is the safest and most effective way right now to eliminate hot flashes. But when we look at the NK3 inhibitors like fezolinetant and some of the other ones I've been talking about, those aren't hormones. That's really working on the part of the brain that is actually regulating our internal thermostat. So it's very cool. But so let's go back to the whole issue though of American women don't move a whole lot. There was a study. This is kind of an old study. It was the most recent one I could find though. This was in 2013, looking at women who were over the age of 65, and that 64% of their waking time was spent being sedentary. 64%. I know. And I can guarantee that it's worse now because at least we had people that used to get up and go to work and walk to the bathroom and maybe walk out to lunch with their coworkers. And
Walk to
now,
the water cooler.
post-COVID, people are walking from their kitchen to their
The
closet
fridge.
and that and the fridge, and that's pretty much it. So we're in really, really bad shape right now as far as the amount of activity that the average person gets. And when we talk about exercise, just to be clear, this article and this study wasn't just talking about exercise. It was just talking about activity versus being sedentary. Because we really have three different buckets here. We have the people who literally are sitting on their tush all day doing pretty much nothing, that 65% of their time, you know, spent not moving. And then we have the people who are not going to the gym and they're not necessarily exercising and getting their heart rate and jumping up and down and doing weights, but they are active. They are moving. You know, they're walking, they're going places, they're doing things, and people get credit for that. I mean, that's not the same as being sedentary. So in this study, what they did was they had a week's worth of them monitoring their activity, and they had to record, you know, specifically, were they doing moderate activity? Were they doing vigorous stuff? Were they just walking, or were they just completely sedentary? And then, of course, after that 1 week monitoring period, they did that 24 hours of wearing the sternal device. And then every time they had a hot flash, that they perceived, that they felt, they pressed the button so that the researchers could look and see, did it match? Did their perception of the hot flash match if their monitor was actually recording one. So now let's look at the results because I think they were really interesting. Objective hot flashes were more highly correlated with subjective hot flashes during the waking hours than during sleeping hours. Well, I
That
mean,
kind of makes sense, right? Because if you're
right.
sleeping, it's easy to think you could miss subjectively a hot
You're only
flash. You
going to
could
get
sleep
awakened
through
by the
the
really
bad
severe
ones.
ones. And if you're a good sleeper and all of that. So, okay, no surprise there. And
No
that can be
surprise
shown
there.
in
Or
others.
if your husband snores while you're having one, you might, jolt awake or something. So that made
Absolutely.
sense to me.
Total sense. Okay. And then they found that overweight women were more likely to log a hot flash when they weren't actually having one. How did you react to that finding?
It didn't surprise me, but I'm not sure why it didn't. Because I can't really explain it. I mean, can you? Could you? Lauren, I didn't come
No,
up with.
no. The point is even not so much that it was overweight women or not overweight women. It's that some people think they're having hot flashes and they're not. That's important with this.
Sure.
Okay. So then the
Agreed.
next point,
Agreed.
replacing 1 hour of sitting with 1 hour of vigorous activity was associated with a 100% increase in hot flash. So, okay, the people that were sitting there doing nothing and then they were doing 1 hour of activity, they had more hot flashes. So, Dr.
I know.
Sophocles, what does
I
that do for
don't
your
know.
theory
I
that we
was.
started off with that exercise is going to help regulate that internal thermostat a little better?
Yeah. I mean, who knows? I think I was surprised. I pondered why this might be. I couldn't really come up with anything because so what? So you're exercising more. Why would you necessarily have more hot flashes? It didn't make sense to me. But again, this is a. I'd still call this a small study. I'd still love to see this study done with 1900 women and have them wear the monitors for 72 hours. I
Over a period of 9 months, where they do it like 72
something.
hours, something like
Yeah,
that.
I have a
So,
hard time latching on to
right,
these
we're not
and
hanging our
not
hat on
doing.
this data. But having said that, what that said to me wasn't so much, oh, if you exercise, you're going to flash more. What it said to me was, if you exercise, you're not going to flash less. That's kind of what I was taking from
And
that.
that's the thing you said at the very beginning is it is a bit of a wash. For every study that I can quote saying how much exercise helped, you can find a study that says not really.
Right.
I mean, I just come back to risk benefit and the risk of exercise is pretty darn low
I'm
and the
going to stop you
benefits
there
so
because, oh,
myriad.
no. We are not arguing about the benefit of exercise.
No, I know,
That is
I
a
know, I
done
know.
deal. We are on the same page. Everyone
I
should
know.
exercise, but this is
Yeah.
very specific to
The
is it
hot
going
flash.
to help your hot flashes? Okay, so then the
Yeah.
next thing they found, sitting by an hour was associated with a 7% increase in the rate of objectively measured sleeping hot flashes. So the more they sat, the more
The more hot
hot
flashes.
flashes they had while they were sleeping.
I mean, I'm not surprised because I'm in the camp of exercise equals fewer hot flashes. If you put a gun to my head and said, which camp are you in? But as we've said, I don't know why. Can you?
Yeah.
I can't think of why this, why does that mean you're getting more objectively measured hot flashes while you're sleeping?
Yeah.
Because I just don't know. I mean, I
No,
haven't read
I
any
agree. It's
studies that
like,
conclude
and
that.
when they said they overall, they looked at total hot flashes and they combined the day and stuff and the night stuff. And they said that physical activity really didn't have any impact at all on hot flashes. I mean, that was the bottom line of this is that they said, okay, we did all this stuff and we accurately measured it and we did it in the day and did it at night. And it just showed that it really doesn't have an impact. But the other thing that they did say that I thought was kind of interesting is that one of the takeaways from this is that these people who were perceiving hot flashes when they weren't having them, that can really throw off the data and that maybe has to be taken account in the future. I mean, my takeaway from this whole thing was, okay, this still doesn't answer the question definitively. And, again, we know exercise is a good thing, but based on this, I am not going to be out there telling women, and if you exercise, it is definitely going to help your hot flashes. I'm going to say, well,
No,
the
for sure.
exercise
I
and
say
maybe.
that it's a maybe and it's a try it because if you exercise and you sleep better and you're sleeping through some of the hot flashes you're having at night, I think you've won part of the battle. And I think that when I look at this study, I have the same feeling of, doesn't sway me or change what I do in practice. But it does make me think about future study. If they were going to do this study again, or another study in a similar vein, I would love them to almost think of it as jury duty, where they would screen out for the women who were saying they had hot flashes subjectively when nothing showed objectively, because I think those are going to mess up the data.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the thing. In a lot of studies right now, they do these placebo washout periods where they give everybody a placebo, and then the people that look like they're having an effect, they're out of the study because they already know that those people are responding more to a placebo effect than the drug effect. So I think that's a great point, that they should start off by eliminating people that are not even accurately known whether they
Population. Group of women needs their own study. You know, that group of women, you know, and are they higher rate of depression? Are they in a bad marriage? Are they having sex? Are they sleeping?
Is the thermostat up too high? You know, maybe they should stop with the down blanket and the flannel pajamas. I mean, who knows?
I was actually just going to say the exact same thing. They're probably still using their winter down comforter in July, but we don't know. But they merit their own study because their subjective menopause experience is not optimal. And we know we live in a society where women are dismissed and brushed off anyway. I mean, they certainly deserve to feel better, but I think they don't have a place in a study where we're really trying to take the time to look at objective measurements. And
study is not only determining who's in the study, but who's out of the study. And I totally agree with you that if I did not review this study, I'm a reviewer for the journal Menopause, but I was not asked to review this study. If I had, I would have sent it back and said, you have to give us more data than 24 hours. You know, you have to do this once a month for a period of time and have somebody. Look, we all know that these are hard studies to do. They're expensive studies. They take time. You don't have the funding. But having said that, either you're going to do it right. So I would look at this as a pilot, that it's an interesting preliminary study in which you would say, okay, we need more. We need more. This did not answer our original question that you and I both had when we opened up the journal to look at this study. And the original question we had was, does exercise have an impact on hot flashes? And after doing this whole deep dive into the data, we still have the same question. So
I feel like I just got a 24-hour hot flash experience, you know, parade of data. And nodded and went, okay, but some of the outcomes were so mixed and contradictory that it doesn't change clinical practice. It makes me want more study, but it makes me think it should be slightly different.
We wanted more study before we read the study. So
yeah, exactly. So I think we both have that feeling of just, okay, I'm glad they're looking at it. I dream that there'll be a study with so much power that it's just definitive, but you know, it's a complex thing. Women are complex creatures, and thermoregulation is complex too.
And there are so many variables. And I would personally give this study a C-. I don't know what you would have given it.
Yeah, me too. I feel like I hate to be that teacher, but it's like, you know, ladies, you gotta, and gentlemen, you gotta.
We're that teacher. We are.
Yeah. Well, we're allowed to be because we read a lot of different ones. And the more you read, the more you can sort of smell the good ones from the bad ones pretty quickly. You sort of get a sense of.
But the other thing is, and I'm not putting people down for this because we're all busy. We're all trying to read as many articles as we can. But a lot of times and I do this too sometimes, you know, you just read the abstract of an article because you don't have time to read the whole 15-page article. And you just kind of say, all right, what's the basic take? And it's truly only when you read the entire design of the article and see exactly what they did that you can really make your own conclusion. Because very often the conclusions of the researchers are not the same as the conclusions of someone who is a clinician who has done a more thorough exploration of this. And I didn't mention that the authors of this study are PhDs. And I have nothing against PhDs. We rely on PhDs for good basic research like this. But it is different than someone like you and I who is taking care of patients who are experiencing hot flashes. and been doing so for many, 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 many years. So our approach is a little bit different. All right,
Well, they're from the Department of Exercise Physiology and Sports Medicine, and also the Department of Anthropology. So I actually loved that they were looking through a different lens, but I also was aware, because I don't know why I'm kind of nerdy. I always like to look at where they're from and the department they're in and stuff. And I love that. I love the collaboration, but I'm also so aware that I'm not going to likely get a conclusion that's going to make me change my clinical practice. That's okay. That's okay too.
Because these are not clinicians. I mean, truly. And there's a part of me that wants to drop them a note and say, hey, next time you do this study, why don't you have me or Maria on? Because you need someone who actually takes care of women who have hot flashes.
You figure, think of how far they are from what you and I have done, you know, for years, walking in that room, listening to women with hot flashes. So C minus with an asterisk saying, I'm sure if they could sit down with you and I in a whiteboard, they could redesign the next phase of this study that would pack a little more punch in terms of relevance. So I think
we'll drop them that note. I'm sure they'll really appreciate our C minus, and we can get to a B plus. We're going to pivot a little because I know that you're an advisor to Ember, and this is a wearable device that's been around for a number of years now that has technology that helps women cool down once they've had a hot flash. So give me two sentences on what Ember is, and then I'm going to ask you a few questions.
The Ember Wave is a wearable bracelet. Looks like an Apple Watch. People think of it as it just cools you, but it really doesn't. It applies cooling or heat at very precise intervals. Those intervals were discovered, and that science ultimately won the Nobel Prize in 2021. Purpose of the intervals are that if we put an ice pack on our wrist, we feel cold for a minute, but it doesn't truly affect our overall body perception of being cold, and it doesn't last, right? That's why when you go in cold water in the ocean, after a while, you're used to it. You don't stay cold. But a scientist who ultimately won the Nobel for it realized that if the chilling is at wavelengths, it will impact the nerves in the hypothalamus and affect the autonomic nervous system and stop the mechanism of the hot flash itself. If you and I are talking and I'm getting a hot flash, I can discreetly press a button and begin a cooling cycle that will go to my hypothalamus and stop the hot flash. You can also use an app to program it so it can be doing that 24/7. And you can upgrade or downgrade the extent of the chilling to combat the effect that you need. So what we find is that women who try it once might say, yeah, I think it helped a little, I'm not sure. But women who will use it for the course of a few days or a week and really learn it and then program the app to sync with when they have hot flashes get pretty significant help. It's really doing the same thing as a Veozah or Fezolinetant, but doing it through bioelectricity.
Yeah, very interesting stuff. And I will say that, you know, my take on it in general in the past has been, okay, I will certainly buy into that it makes people feel better and tolerate the hot flash better. But my concern has always been that once the hot flash has occurred, you've already set into place this cascade that causes this inflammatory response through the body, which ultimately long-term is going to impact on cardiovascular health and cognitive function, et cetera. So what's very exciting, and I don't know that you can talk about this yet, is that there is a new Ember Wave that is in development that is actually going to predict the hot flash and essentially stop it before it occurs, right?
Yeah, this is really exciting for us as a company. The golden ticket would be if we could make a device that could sense the hot flash prior to the patient perceiving it. And it turns out they figured this out. It's just going to be tremendous for women to be able to wear something and hopefully literally not perceive their hot flashes. So you and I have been talking about subjective and objective. We can literally wipe out the objective and the subjective, even if it's imperfect. Think of that as a wonderful adjunct to the medical therapeutic options we have. There are groups of women for whom none of our medical options are really quite fitting. So I'm excited.
The more things we have in our toolbox, the better. And that is very exciting. I have a lot of questions, but I'm going to save them because I want to be able to look at the research, because that's what this is all about. We got to look at the research.
We will.
Do the deep dive in the data, and then we can ask the right questions and get the right answers. So,
yeah. And maybe I'll send you one, Lauren, and you can play with it.
I don't know. I kind of like David Yurman. So, when I'm going to wear my
David Yurman. Well, maybe he wants to do a deal and, you know, we'll design you a David Yurman. Yeah.
Now you're talking. Make the
David Yurman menopause.
A little
oh my
more
gosh.
Attractive. And, you know, I'm in there. All right. Thank you so much. I've so enjoyed talking to you. I've learned a lot. I think we did an appropriate analysis of this research, because research that doesn't change anything is just as important as research that does change things.
Just because something has research behind it doesn't mean it's right or works. And I think, you know, we live in an era where there's so much out there. So anything we can do to help your listeners be able to be a little constructively critical of what they're reading, I think is important.
And next time they have a doctor who doesn't want to give them hormone therapy and just says, just exercise, they can now say, it's really not definitive if that helps or not. And it's certainly not helping me. So
exactly. Yeah, with that.
Thank you so much. I will put all of your information in the show notes, including the link to your TED Talk. And it has been a pleasure spending this time together.
Always. Love it. I look forward to talking to you again.
Okay. Quickie wrap up. There were two main takeaways for me about this study. One was, did the perception of having hot flashes accurately correlate with actual hot flashes? Well, in this study, subjective hot flashes more highly correlated with actual recorded hot flashes during wake hours, but not so much during sleeping hours. Interestingly, and somewhat inexplicably, overweight women were more likely to log a hot flash when they weren't actually having one. And this is really useful information for future studies. But did this study help as far as determining if physical activity correlated with the likelihood of hot flashes? Not really. Women that were more sedentary had a 7% increase in the rate of objectively measured hot flashes during sleep. Replacing 1 hour of sitting with 1 hour of vigorous activity was associated with a 100% increase in the subjectively reported but not objectively measured waking hot flashes. My takeaway, honestly, the same as it was before I read this paper. Exercise is a good thing, but at least according to this latest study, not a real strategy for hot flash help. I'm Dr. Lauren Stryker, and thank you for joining me. You will find lots more information in my Insight Information books available on Amazon.com. And follow Francie as she navigates her way through vaginal dryness, hot flashes, and pretty much every menopausal symptom you can think of.
Sometimes I feel blue. She helped me see the light. Now I'm sleeping through the night. I find